Good morning, everyone. This is a reading from Whispers from Eternity, a book of prayer demands by Paramahansa Yogananda. This is number 54. Tune us that we may hear thy voice. Volumes of thy Savior voice resound through the loudspeaker of every loving heart. The voice of thy wisdom roams through the ether of space, seeking everywhere hearts that are tuned to ecstasy. Sadly, thy warning sermons pass unheard by souls deafened with the static of sense pleasure. O divine broadcaster, tune our souls long distracted by the static of our indifference. Fine-tune us with the delicate touch of soul perception. Grant us the privilege of hearing thy magic melodies in the ecstasy of divine awakening. That could almost be the sermon today. So perfect. This is Swamiji wrote a book called The Promise of Immortality, which is a book for the first 6 months of these readings that we every week hear. A reading from the Bible, as you heard Lakshmi do, and a reading from the Bhagavad Gita, almost always delivering the same message, though they do it in very different ways. And Swamiji wrote degrees of commentary on these readings. The most simple one we hear every week, and it's from a book called Rays of One Light. Then he expands that commentary into a book called Rays of the Same Light. And then he writes prolifically in this book called Promise of Immortality. In that book, he has these teachings divided in a way spiritually that would make sense. And this week, right now, closes the first section of all of the readings that we've had. So this is week 8 in the year. We do these readings each year, the same readings. And he says this is the end of this section on the descent of divinity into matter. So all of the weeks, which I don't remember right now, and it doesn't matter, but it's, and there was the Word, and the Word was God, and then we talk about how God manifests everything that we see and know through the vibration of sound. And then there's a chapter that says the light shineth into darkness and so forth. He goes through many ways that the divine can manifest on earth. And then he comes to this reading that says, can man see God? And the answer is no. But can God be seen? The answer is a resounding yes, but it depends on us. I was listening to something on YouTube a couple of weeks ago. I don't remember what it was or who it was, so I'm about to quote somebody that I can't give credit to, so forgive me, whoever that was. I didn't know the person. But he was holding a little Q&A sort of on YouTube, and a very young boy stood up and said to him, if God loves us so much, which you always tell us he does, he was speaking to this man, everybody always tells us he does, why doesn't he just come and let us see him and show us his love? Which I think is a very good question. And I would venture to say that probably most people who are seriously moving forward on a spiritual path seriously means it's a part of their life, they're devoting some energy to it, has actually asked that question. And this man had a very good answer for him. He said, you know, God could do that. He said, God could make the stars form every night in a big sign that says God exists. He said he could make it so that imprinted on every atom of creation, it said, made by God. And he said he could do that. He said, but that's not what God's interested in. He's not interested in just numbers of people knowing that he exists. That he said, what God wants is to draw us into a loving relationship with him. And I just thought that was so beautiful and so true. And it also so clearly requires our energy, because what we hear from this reading and what most of us know is that that which we call God, that state of consciousness that is irreducible, it can't be defined because it's defining everything. We cannot see that as long as we are planted in ego consciousness. It's just impossible. There was a saint from the 10th century, Saint Simeon, who said these beautiful words, which are actually filled with so much hope. But he said, the minute when the heart's feelings become purified, the soul beholds God. So the minute that the heart's feelings become purified, the soul beholds God, which was really what Christ was saying with the Beatitudes. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. So those who have moved, who no longer are drawn by the things of this earth, by the material world, by that which the ego holds us to, as we can purify our hearts of all of that, then we will be able to see God, have this experience that was so beautifully described by Yogananda in this chapter in the autobiography of a yogi. And in the very end there, I don't have the words here, but when he said, I think I'll get this right, I cognized the center of the Empyrean as a point of perception in the center of my heart. If those aren't the exact words, they're close. But where he could realize that every atom is the center, every atom is a manifestation of divine consciousness, and therefore is the center of all that is. He says it beautifully in his poem, Samadhi, and as Swamiji alluded to in the reading today, and I'm actually going to read some of this, Krishna says it so beautifully in the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. I won't read a lot, but that poetic statement of what it is to see God, to achieve that state of consciousness, it's very important for us to read these descriptions over and over long before they make sense to us, because, again, they're not going to make sense. We can't figure it out. There's a story, I've told it so many times, I'll shorten it, but it's so perfect for this reading that anytime I get this reading, I have to tell it. The story of a farmer or somebody who's traveling through farmlands, who's trying to find his way somewhere. and he can't figure out how to go, and he stops and he asks directions. And the man that he asks says, you go right down there. When the road yields, you go to the right and then go a little bit. When you come to the stop sign, turn left and you'll be there. And the man does that and he's not there. So he finds another person and he says, can you tell me how to get to this place, wherever he was going? And they say, yeah, sure. Let's see. You're going to go back out. You're going to go part way back the way you came. When you get to that stop sign, turn the other way. Then, no, wait a minute. That's not it. Wait. No, you don't go back from where you came. You go out here and you turn left. And he starts and he said, no. And then he stops for a minute and he looks at this man and he says, you can't get there from here. And it's just such a perfect story because we can't get there, to that egoless state, to that state of pure soul consciousness, pure soul receptivity. We cannot get there from where we are. There's something that comes in between. Of course, that something is always the guru. It has to be the guru. Because we couldn't find our way. We need something to help us move from where we are to where we're going. And we can't study our way there. We can't read our way there. You're going to hear Krishna say this so beautifully. But we need to keep approximating that in every way that we can. And that's part of why we want to keep reading this chapter from the autobiography of the yogi master's poem, Samadhi, which just starts right out. Vanish the shade of light and pale. Vanished. It's gone. That shade that keeps us from knowing God, from seeing God. It's not seeing with these eyes, as Swamiji wrote. As Krishna says, you can't see me with mortal eyes, so I give you sight divine. He says it to Arjuna before he lifts him into that state of cosmic consciousness. But when we read these things, we are attuning ourselves to that pure consciousness, the vibration of it, the energy of it, that makes us ever more aware of it and centered in it. It takes us closer and closer. This is our job, in part of our job, one of the ways, in forming that loving relationship with God that that man was telling that young boy God so wants. He wants us. The loving relationship means open our hearts purely. That heart that is purified means rid of all desires, all likes, all dislikes, all needs from this body. We are not this body. We are a soul that has been made perfectly in God's image. We are meant to be with God. We've just gotten a little sidetracked here. There's a beautiful story of Master's first disciple in the United States, Dr. Lewis. Dr. Lewis was a dentist in Boston, and he met Master Yogananda pretty early on in Yogananda's arrival in the United States. He was drawn to a talk that Master was giving. Of course he would be. How else would he? Clearly he was a high soul. How else could he turn out to be the first disciple? But he was also a very sort of staid kind of person, very serious. And the night he went to this talk, he wanted to see Master, and he went back, and he and Master had time alone. And it was Christmas Eve, He was supposed to be getting home, but he was actually really going home. And he said to Master in that talk, he said, in the Bible it says, if thine eye be single, your whole body will be filled with light. Master was just sitting there. And Dr. Lewis said, do you know this? And Master said, I think so. And then Dr. Lewis said, can you show it to me? And Master said, I think so. And Dr. Lewis was sitting there. And then Master said to him, will you love me forever as I love you? He was meeting this avatar for the first time, but he said something about him made me say yes. And Master just leaned in, forehead to forehead, but spiritual eye to spiritual eye, and gave Dr. Lewis an experience of the divine right in that moment. We need a guru. That's the whole point. We're lost out in those farmlands trying to find our way. Somebody's going to say to us, you can't get there from here. Here's what you need to do. I'd like to take a moment and read a little bit, because I know Swamiji said it's much harder through the Bhagavad Gita, and I think that's true. But when you get this little book, and you just, which is just all of the stanzas of the Gita, and you just read it, as I said, we're not even trying to understand it. We're trying to feel it. We're trying to let it move energy within us. We're trying to allow it, allow Krishna's words, allow Arjuna's deep yearning to know God, Arjuna who represents every one of us. We want to feel that and let our hearts open as his heart did. We want to be begging Krishna to say, show me, I need to see what it is. And I want to read just a little bit of this to you. The Blessed Lord, who's Krishna, said to Arjuna, speaking my supreme utterance, he said, speaking for your highest good, I will say more to you who have listened with joy. Even that, there's the first lesson for us, to be listening with a joyful spirit, to be listening for God with great awareness. This is not a passive exercise on this way to seeing God. And even, of course, every line is filled like that. And I, of course, won't be able to stop with every line. But I love that. Krishna saying to Arjuna, you who have listened with joy, I will tell you. And then he says to him, I am the source and the origin of all of those who have been trying to find me. I'm paraphrasing right now and haven't been able to. He says, even the multitude of gods and the great sages, he said, know me, cannot know me in my unmanifested form. That means that state of Christ consciousness that has not yet manifested itself, because that's what we're all heading back to. That is exactly what it means to see God. And then he says, I am all of these qualities, and he lists discrimination, wisdom, calm, clarity, forgiveness, truthfulness. It goes on. It's a long parody. Birth, death, fear, self-discipline, charity. My one self is all of this, he says. They are modifications of that one self. And again, he says to us, everything, every thought, every feeling is a pure expression, manifestation of me. our next group. We could find God anywhere. We could, if we could open our eyes, if we really wanted to. Everywhere we looked, we would see the divine looking back at us, working through us, in our pain, in our confusion. We could relate to it as the divine. This is just God helping me work something out, we could say to ourselves, as many moments in the day as we can remember. I am the source of everything, Krishna says. Realizing this great truth, the wise, the awe-stricken adore me. Krishna is saying this to Arjuna. And Arjuna says, okay, you've told me all of this in words. I want to see you, he says. How shall I meditate on you to know you as you are? In what forms and aspects can I most accurately think of you? He's saying, don't just tell me about it. Show me. I am so hungry and thirsty to know you. This is, again, that deep and true yearning. God cannot say no to us. He cannot. And Krishna says to him, I shall willingly relate to you something of my manifestations, but I'll relate only those which are outstanding, for there is no end to my variety. And then Krishna goes on for at least 20 stanzas, and he says the expansion of the chant that Viraj chanted today, that I almost called Viraj last night and said, will you chant, oh God, beautiful? Because that chant takes all of these stanzas. This is so much more. But it says, in the forest, I am green. In the mountains, I'm high. I'm everything. In the river, I'm restless. In the ocean, I'm grave. He goes on. And to the yogi, I am bliss. There's much more, and there's much more in the Gita that just says, wherever you look, see me. Next time you go on a hike, quietly, attuned to the green, to the mountains, to the rivers, be still and know that I am, because I am everything. And he goes on. And then he says to Arjuna, know this only, I, the unchanging and everlasting, permeate and sustain the entire cosmos, but with a fragment of my essential being. He says, I'm everything, and this is nothing. Of course he could write in the stars, God exists. He could stamp every atom with made by God. But he wants us to really understand this. So now Arjuna says, show me. And he goes on. And the first words that Arjuna says, because again, I just can't read all of this, were 1,000 suns to appear together in the sky, 1,000 suns appear together in the sky. Their brilliance could suggest but dimly the splendor of that exalted being. I love this line. Arjuna, wonderstruck, the follicles of hair on his arms rising in awe. Isn't that so much more beautiful than we say, my hair stood on end? No, that is too passive. What's happening here in the Gita, every word, rising in awe, because even our hair follicles are filled, are a mere manifestation of that consciousness. Everything is. It's such a beautiful phrase. It goes on and on. But eventually, what happens that is so beautiful? Arjuna begs Krishna to come back into human form. It's It's too much. He doesn't see yet how to embrace Krishna in all of that. He wants him back in that body as he knows him. It's so loving and beautiful. And he's already apologized to Krishna. It's like, how could I have been so casual with you as we're riding around in this, not carriage, but chariot, thank you. As we're riding around in this chariot, he's saying to Krishna, it's like, how could I be doing anything but laying at your feet now that I've seen you? But this is what I want to read. This is the last thing I'll read. This is now Krishna speaking to Arjuna again. He's back in his body. And this is very meaningful for us. Of course, that's an understatement. But we have to, again, feel these words. No mortal man, save thee alone, great hero, he says, has looked upon my universal form. No mortal man. Man means nobody like us in a human form. Not by sacrifice, not by gifts in charity, nor by noble works, nor by pious study of the Vedas can that vision be attained. It is not attained by penances or by faithfulness or by scripture or by charities. He says it. He just keeps going. Only by single-hearted devotion achieved through deep yogic practice is it possible to behold me and to become one with me as you have done. That is so beautiful and so clearly stated. You know, Swamiji, again, in this promise of immortality, he uses an analogy of from Greek mythology of Ariadne and Theseus. Theseus has to go in and kill the monster. And Ariadne, who's a Greek princess, really, but she's in love with him, she gives him a spool of thread because he has to go into this labyrinth to find the monster and slay the monster who's been eating a lot of princesses in the past to assuage him. That's a whole other long story. But she doesn't want to be eaten, so he's going to go in, her lover, and he's going to slay this monster. And she gives him a spool of thread so that he can unwind the thread as he goes and then follow the thread back out and make it out to safety. And that thread is our connection to the Guru. That is exactly the way that we need to be connected to the only source, the only presence in our lives. Such a perfect day we're doing a discipleship initiation here after this, not after the service, but actually as soon as I'm done speaking. But it's so perfect because here is the reading. We hear it many times in many ways, but here it is so directly. It says, you cannot do this alone. You do not, there is nothing about the divine that is comprehensible to your state. Nothing. That state of super consciousness, of divine ecstasy, of oneness, of our souls returning home, the entire purpose of this human incarnation, you need a guide. You need that thread to follow. And just as Lakshmi said at the end of our fire ceremony, and I don't remember her exact words now, I wish I did, but she said, God is so ready, he will jump down enthusiastically and just take us where we want to go. That was the point with what happened with Dr. Lewis. But it's the point of so many stories of miracles. There are so many wonderful stories of when God appears in serious ways, as he did with Dr. Lewis, as playful ways. Some time ago, I told the story of a friend of mine. Interestingly, she just called me yesterday. And she was praying to God with really earnest and really saying to him, show me directly. I want to see your smiling face, she said. This was now years ago. She said, 10 minutes later, I walked outside, and there is, this is a true story, by the way, there is in the air, you know, one of those skywriters that makes images in the sky, and they made a happy face, a smiling face. She had just said to God, I want, if you're there, show me. I want to see your smiling face. Now, really, what is the likelihood? No, that is God's hand. Thich Nhat Hanh had that very beautiful, it wasn't a saying, he was speaking. He said, miracles are natural. When they do not occur, something has gone wrong. What can go wrong? What goes wrong is that we walk around with our mother right here, wanting to love us, serve us, give to us, take us by the hand, grab us, take us home, meet us in our hearts, our pure hearts. And we shall see God, but we are so busy doing everything in the world that will not bring us what we want with great energy, with great dedication, with great devotion, doing all of this, just being stuck here. As many times a day as we can remember to see God everywhere, everywhere. It's not just in nature. Nature makes it easy. It's in all of our friends' eyes. Again, it's in every thought, every feeling. Let's put reminders up that says, I want you. I'm coming home to you. Now I see you're everywhere. Pick up this, read the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. It would take 5 minutes in this little book. Read it. Even read it before we meditate and find ourselves closer and closer to God. If we make just a little effort, he's right there with huge, infinite effort, energy, love, just welcoming us, helping us, showing us the way.
I have a love who's far away, far away, far away. I have a love who's far away, farther away than the stars. And yet she's stolen my heart away, heart away, heart away. And yet she's stolen my heart away, farther away than the stars. Keep me not bound, no, teach me to fly far from earth's madness, free ere I die. Keep me not bound, ma, teach me to fly farther away than the stars. There's nothing here nearly so dear, nearly so dear, nearly so dear. There's nothing here nearly so dear as her laughter away in the stars. Keep me not bound, no, teach me to fly far from earth's madness, free ere I die. Keep me not bound, no, teach me to fly farther away than the stars. There's nothing here nearly so dear, nearly so dear, nearly so there's nothing here nearly so dear as her laughter away in the stars.